All right, we're back.
Thank you. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Has Mr. Bratton read the complaint and the response that's been filed by Broomfield?
He read them in the last half hour when I brought this to his attention, so he has just read them.
I think our preference would probably be for Mr. Bratton to conduct the hearing.
All right, that's fine. Then he's going to come up, and I'll leave all the materials for him, and you all can proceed.
Okay, I just kind of found out about this recently, so here we go. I'm going to reread the script, just kind of start the hearing over. So this is a public hearing to address the HAVA and Elections Complaint Number SOS-HAVA-64-13-0002. Today is Thursday, January 23rd, and the time is 1:45 p.m. We are in the Secretary of State's Aspen Conference Room. I am Troy Bratton. I'm the Legal and Policy Manager for the Secretary of State's office. I am convening this hearing in accordance with the notice published on our website. Ms. Mann is still here. I'm just going to move to the, instead of going through the housekeeping, to the procedural part. All interested parties will have an opportunity to submit any data, views, or arguments in writing and, if desired, orally. First, the complainant, Mrs. Marks, will have an opportunity to speak. Then Broomfield County will have an opportunity. After that, all interested parties will be invited to present. So with that, Ms. Marks, if you'd like to come up.
Thank you, Mr. Bratton. You all have a screen that you can see, right, of my presentation?
Yes, we do.
Great. And I guess for people who are listening, do we have this on your website? It is on Citizen Center website if it's not on yours. It is in the website. So anybody can go to what to look at the what is the linked or?
It's on the election complaint tracking page under this complaint number, which is 64-13-002.
Okay. And so this is just sort of a PowerPoint layman's language overview. So I have combined a HAVA complaint with an election code complaint. There is one issue that is a HAVA issue. Five issues are not HAVA issues necessarily, but election code issues. Because of the many problems in Broomfield, I could have gone on for pages with many issues that are unaddressed, but I was afraid that in doing so, it might really delay the process. And I thought it was more important to put in front of the Secretary's office several of the key issues and then have the help with those before we go on to others, perhaps. At one time, in their response, Broomfield suggested that the complaint should be dismissed because I am not a registered elector in Broomfield, but of course HAVA tells us, and I believe the Secretary's process for election complaint also tells us, that any person has the right to file a complaint in local residency. It's not the grounds for dismissal. So in virtually all of my election complaint issues, as opposed to the HAVA issue, I think there's one central theme that will help us think about what to do and help us think about how it came to be that we have so many issues with this election. And that is that the bipartisan election judges lost their independence and allowed the staff, the election staff, to control the election. They agreed to sign the tabulation tapes coming from the AccuVote machine without even reviewing what they were signing. Interestingly, they signed at the bottom of these tabulation tapes the following statement: "We, the undersigned, do hereby certify that the election was conducted in accordance with the laws of the state." Well, obviously, these people were certainly not in a position to know that, but they, because they weren't even being allowed to see what they were signing, and they were not looking at the tabulations they were signing, they signed off on this statement. So despite the many failures that are detailed in the Secretary of State's report, the lawsuits, this complaint, the election judges willingly signed the above statement, which I think really says that what happened here was a loss of independence of those citizen judges and therefore a loss of controls.
Ms. Marks, can I just ask you a quick question?
Certainly.
Preliminarily, you mentioned their response and about you being a registered voter. They also bring up that this wasn't a federal election.
Correct.
And then there were allegations about the 2012 election, which has already happened, and the 2014 primary coming up. Do you have any response to this?
Yes. I don't believe I made any allegations about the 2012 election. I don't recall that I did. But certainly I'm aware that the one-year time frame had elapsed since the November 12, 2012 election. And HAVA does, in fact, encourage us to contact the Secretary of State in advance when we are concerned that a violation of HAVA may happen. And if, in fact, there was a violation of HAVA, given that this equipment will be, again, tested and put into service within a couple of 3 months as they get ready for the June election, assuming there's no other election, that I think that the complaint is appropriate so that you will have time to investigate and they will have time to remedy any potential HAVA problems as they're looking at this going. I guess they would have to start their preparations by April, I believe, for the June primary.
Okay. And on the federal election issue?
That is a federal election.
Okay. But I mean, is it related to this coordinated election? And
No, it is not related to this coordinated election. The HAVA complaint, if you want to say it can only relate to elections with a federal or candidate on the ballot, is prospective, looking at the June primary and the preparations that'll have to begin for that very soon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and am I answering your question here?
Yes, that's
okay.
Perfect.
I was aware when I filed this that we were looking at prospective on that HAVA complaint.
Okay.
So the problem that I just defined, I think, actually holds the key to the resolution, as well as it helps us define the problem here. That the issue was that the bipartisan judges failed to review and certify the key elements of the election. The result is it created a major deficiency in the certification and resulted in an invalid abstract for state and local contest. Not just, we all tend to get so focused on the fracking question, but really this created a major deficiency for even your state ballot issues that this office certified and has to certify to the ballot and then certified in the abstract. The solution, let's just go back and do the work that we failed to do. And so you will hear me asking throughout this presentation for a declaratory order from this office for bipartisan teams of judges to come back and to complete the task, if they can, that they missed, to certify the mail ballot returns as required, and to implement that through a declaratory order. And I'll try to explain where we had the gap and maybe what we can do to fill that gap. So the required process for judges certification. We go from the AccuVote scanner that's reading the ballots and printing out the tape, and I've done an illustration of the tape here. The judges then took the tape of the tabulated results, and this would be, they probably had between the recount and the original maybe 100 tapes. And this would have been run at different times during the election process. They were not run by ballot style. They were only run in summary. I'm sure that in the memory cards, there is the ability to go obtain the report by ballot style. But the long report was not used. A short report of summary was used. But even that, at the totals at the bottom of the tape, the judges were not allowed to look at the arithmetic. They were not allowed to look at the numbers. They just signed the statement we talked about without looking. Although what I'm trying to demonstrate here is what should have happened. They should have looked at those tapes, looked at them for reasonableness, compared them to the LED reader to make sure they had the right number of ballots, and that nothing looked unreasonable in those tapes. Then those tapes would have gone into a summary. Then they should have been able to check their tapes against those summary reports that would have been printed out by the GEMS system that would have shown by ballot style. They could have traced them back tape by tape. And then all of those certifications by tabulation run, by ballot style, would have tied back to their detail work. And then that is what's to be given to the Canvas Board, where the Canvas Board then takes all of those certified, consolidated returns, and, excuse me, not consolidated, but they then have the consolidated return that they sign and certify as the abstract. So what was missing here is that the bipartisan election judges working in their teams ran the tapes, didn't look at what they were signing, no summaries were put in front of them. Essentially, they just went through a mechanical task of running the ballots through, taking off what looked like a cash register tape, and then turning it over to the election staff. So when the Canvas Board, I've depicted them in the middle photograph, as the Canvas Board then got together to sign the abstract, what they had was just a summary that underneath was not supported by certified returns, that nobody had really looked at what was underneath this consolidated statement. And of course, to have the consolidated statement certified, it needs certified underpinnings. The underpinnings were never created. Title I in 7.5208 requires that the judges certify the mail ballot returns by style or by precinct prior to the presentation of the abstract to the Canvas Board. That's what I was just trying to illustrate with the pictures. By the way, that is a new section of the election code. That was put in at the time of House Bill 1303. And that was acknowledging that judges have always certified returns at the precinct level in the past. Out in their precincts, they would certify their precinct's returns. They would take it to the clerk, and ultimately it would be rolled up for the certification by the Canvas Board. Recognizing that the state was going to all mail ballot elections, the legislature put in this requirement that in the all-mail ballot processing, the judges needed to do exactly the same thing they had been doing at the precincts, certify the details so that the abstract would then be ready for a review by the Canvas Board. So Broomfield failed to tabulate by style. They merely ran summary reports, creating the judges' inability to certify the tabulations. The judges didn't review the tabulation summary or the tabulation reports by ballot style. They weren't even produced. The judges didn't review the eligibility requirements that we've heard so much about. And so the staff was doing the work of determining residency eligibility without the oversight of the bipartisan teams. And so staff ended up making error-prone decisions without the grassroots, party-appointed judges' involvement. And we know that ended up with a process with errors in it, where voters were both disenfranchised and over-enfranchised, if that's such a word. And so there was a disconnect and a knowledge gap between the counting judges and the ultimate election results. So my suggestion for something of a global resolution is for this office to issue a declaratory order asking the judges to come back and pick up where they left off. Pick up the pieces that they failed to do. Let them attempt to certify the returns so that the abstract that you have in your hands for a number of the elections can be supported by what it was intended to be supported by. You've got an abstract with two signatures, two of the three signatures of the canvas board, but is not supported underneath. So if the secretary were to issue an order to try to bring the judges back, here are the things I suggest that could be done by the bipartisan election judges. Attempt to review and attempt to certify the ballot, the tabulations by style. All of that information is still there. It's on the memory cards. And certainly the ballots are still there. Review the residency and eligibility issues of the voters to determine what the number of errors was. Some work has been done on that by the secretary's office. Some work has been done by watchers. Some work has been done by the staff of Broomfield. I don't think those numbers are reconciled, and certainly the election judges should be involved in that. It might reduce greatly the number of errors reported and determine if those residency and eligibility errors can be corrected. I think there's more research could be done, and possibly it could be learned that there were people who actually had been residents and their ballots should be counted, and maybe they were counted. So maybe the number of errors could be reduced. The statement of ballots should be reconciled to attempt to account for all ballots. It sort of reminds us of the anomaly box, so-called anomaly box, where that anomaly box shows us that not all the ballots were accounted for. Ballots issued, ballots spoiled, ballots received, ballots damaged, ballots duplicated, ballots counted. There are huge gaping holes right now where, while it is required that the judges sign off on a statement of ballots, the statement of ballots was not truly reconciled. You all know a bit about the anomaly box. There are still many questions about the contents there. How did they get there? Why weren't they accounted for before? The judges should be involved in that. Determine the impact of the improperly reviewed overvotes and undervotes. I'll get to that in a little more detail shortly, but the tabulation in the recount is probably, it was not done in a legally compliant way. And it may be that on that recount that tabulation number could be refined based on overvotes and undervotes that were not properly handled. Try to determine the impact of the ballots that were mailed, that were issued to forwarding addresses. How many of those actually went to people who were not residents of Broomfield? How many residents of Broomfield didn't get that second chance who were in similarly situated positions? We have questions about some improperly cast UOKAVA ballots that were cast electronically when they should have been cast on paper. We'll come back to that. There were a number of traceable ballots that the city has now recognized that were created by the residency issue. The judges should determine that and determine whether there is a constitutional violation that has an impact on the results. And then, looking at all of those potential errors, determine whether it exceeds the margin of victory, which I believe the margin of victory needs to be recalculated based on at least under and overvotes and any other ballots that are found that are legitimate. So in other words, bring them back to let's do the work that got missed to begin with. I believe they should certify all ballot contests possible, including the two state issues that are already certified by your office, but the underlying work hasn't been done. It would seem only proper to require that the underlying work, certainly not going to change your certification of the results. Not enough ballots there to do that, but this work should still be done. The number of errors and potential errors should be determined and compared on all the ballot contests. If they came up with, hey, we've got 300 errors, I don't know that any other contests were that close, but somebody ought to look to find out. And then the reports that result from the judge's work should be delivered to this office, the Canvas Board, the City Council, and the courts. And I think that work, if attempted by the election judges, would likely resolve many questions of whether the winner of ballot question 300 can even be determined. It may be that they come up with a margin that far exceeds the errors. Maybe that they come up with errors that far exceed the margin. Regardless, the work wasn't done. The work needs to be done now.
So you're not asking they come to an actual result, but just attempt to resolve them. Because like with the residency ones, if the ballots are separated from the envelope, I'm not sure how a bipartisan team could figure that out.
I completely agree with you, and they shouldn't be able to, right? I mean, we don't want those ballots to be traceable, although apparently the city is saying they are. Even if they are, they shouldn't be looked at in that fashion, because that would be a real violation of the Constitution. But Mr. Bratton, what I'm saying is, if we go through and do another tabulation and make sure that we've got the count right, let's say that another tabulation tells us that it's a 200 vote margin, but our errors, the residency errors, are 15, then we don't worry about the residency errors anymore. So I'm saying let's figure out for sure what our count is. And then all we're saying, there are going to be errors that just cannot be resolved, but we would know the count of those errors. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I'm trying to, okay.
Yes.
Because I think right now there is a debate as to, is the margin of victory higher than the errors, or are the errors higher than the margin of victory? If the judges did their work, we would know that. So the Secretary's office has both the jurisdiction and the duty, I say, to issue a declaratory order in this case. If not, by accepting abstracts that just have two signatures, or even if you had three signatures, without the underlying certification of ballot style and precinct, then the Secretary's office is setting a bad precedent for future elections. Why should the judges do the work? Just get two Canvas board members to sign off and say, okay, it looks good to me. It would send the message. If these judges never have to do the underlying work, it will send the message that their work is meaningless and that they don't have to reach a formal conclusion at the end of their work for reasonableness or accuracy. So, as I was talking about redoing, if you will, the tabulations, we had, I believe it was 6 overvotes and 209 undervotes, or something close to that in the official abstract. But those numbers were determined in a non-compliant way. Those numbers can't really be reconciled because they were not accounted for properly as they were tabulated. For example, overvotes were supposed to be segregated out, given to a 4-person resolution team. That resolution team was to collect all of those ballots, have a log that resolved each of those ballots, and would explain why. And then they would count all of those together. So today, all of those ballots with those 6 overvotes are intermingled. We don't even know there was no accounting, again, at each tape that was done as to whether or not the machine actually kicked out 6, or it reported 6, or it kicked out 7. It basically just needs to be done again. Can I clarify something on that for you?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. All right. So the board review did not happen. There was, what they did instead was they would take the 2 counting judges, go get a duplicate ballot, sign that they were getting a duplicate ballot, but they certainly were not using the 4-man team that they were supposed to, nor were they segregating them so that we could go back and audit them now. So there was not the segregated tabulation. There was not a reconciliation of the overvotes. And the undervote detection for the recount was not turned on. Undervote detection and sorting would have required that for every undervote in the recount, that the machine would essentially spit it out, And then the judges would count, oh, okay, in this batch there were 20 rejected as overvotes. Oh, yes, and our tape says 20 undervotes. Did I say overvotes? I meant to say undervotes.
Yes.
Okay, am I clear on what I'm saying about?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Now, ballots mailed to forwarding addresses, and there's probably been more written in the Secretary's report on this issue than anywhere else. It is really impossible to know what kind of impact that had on results. And it's because there were qualitative judgments that favored some voters. And so the city of Broomfield gave certain voters a second chance to get their address right and get their mail ballot. We're not saying necessarily that people who got effectively forwarded a ballot when they weren't supposed to get a ballot that way, we're not saying that they were not legitimate voters. Some work needs to be done on that. I think there were 77 of them who actually had a ballot issued to a forwarding address, who actually then voted it. The problem is those people were treated in a favored way compared to people whose ballots didn't show up undeliverable or with a forwarding address, or the ones that showed up later after the election. It's impossible to really know how that impacted the election, but what we do know is that similarly situated voters were treated differently, and it had to have some impact, given that we had 77 of those voters actually vote. The violation, of course, is the requirement that any national change of address generated mailing address change or residential address change be reviewed by your office and vetted and controlled, and then with the instructions going to the election official as to what addresses they can change. I talked already about the disparate treatment of relocating voters. Some of those envelopes no doubt came back with a forwarding address after it was too late to reissue a ballot. That was just the luck of the draw. Some ballots never came back at all with a forwarding address. So again, you get, because they didn't follow the rules that you all and the statutes had set forward, people were treated differently, and it does have an impact. Also, it skews the voter rolls for the future. When people's addresses are changed without going through the proper controls. And so that needs to be looked at as well. I would say if you do issue this declaratory order and ask the judges to come back, the judges should review those voter records to determine what the impact was. That's going to be a hard thing to do, but at least they should do as much quantitative work as they can. Check to make sure that those people still remained Broomfield voters. Find out if, when they were sent, one thing we know is that a number of them were sent ballots to a post office box. And that seemed to be the only information that the clerk had in terms of the new residence of this person. So what ballot did they send them? Did they send them Ward 3, Ward 4, Ward 5? Based on the location of that post office box. So that's something I think that the judges should be looking at and trying to figure out the impact of. Uokava voters. There were a number of Uokava voters who returned their ballots by email. And Uokava voters are only allowed to return ballots electronically if the circumstances are that there is not a more secure means, such as returning the ballot by mail, available to that voter. And it looks like that basically any overseas voter or any military voter was allowed to return their ballot by email. And certainly that was never the intent of the statute. This was intended to be for those very rare circumstances, particularly, say, a military voter who just had no access to a secure method to vote. because we know that sending it across the internet is, one, not secure. Secondly, most troublesome is not private. And they lose their ability to vote a secret ballot. And there was never any intention that somebody could waive their rights to vote a secret ballot just because it leads to, it can lead to voter intimidation, vote buying and selling. They should only be able to waive their right to a secret ballot in unusual circumstances, like, for example, a voter who needs assistance in voting.
Do you have any evidence about the Uocaba voters that return them by email, whether there was a more secure method for those particular voters? Or?
Well, what is in the record, and I probably need to supplement my record with some records that were obtained by Harvey Branscombe as a watcher. And apparently the voter completed a form saying where they physically were. And some of them were actually in Broomfield. And it looked like the majority of the voters were in urban locations. Some of them were international. Many of them were actually in the United States. Some of them were even at the Pentagon. And so I can supplement my file with that. I believe there were about 18 of them. And actually, when you look at the locations that they reported, it appeared that almost all of them were in urban locations. Hard to know for sure, but this is probably something that needs an investigation by your office where you can get it more details than a citizen can.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so what I'm asking for here as relief is that this practice should be immediately stopped, except for those voters who actually affirm that they have no secure mail ballot option. Because it's a very, very concerning public policy from the secret ballot standpoint. Okay. Discrepant signatures. I believe there were about 193 discrepant signatures that were intended to be cured. And my observations come from the November the 14th processing operation of post-election processing of many of those cured signatures. The affidavit that was returned by the voter, or presumably the voter, is a loosely worded affidavit. It is affidavit that is based on the statute. But what we observed in probably roughly 40 cases, and we had to be extremely imprecise about that because there was no ability to stop the process long enough to thoroughly investigate. And then we've not been allowed to do any further investigation. But what we saw in perhaps 40 voters was an affidavit where the signature was discrepant in between the envelope and the affidavit and the score system, the envelope and the score system. So in other words, we ended up with three signatures purportedly from the same person, but none of them even appeared to be look like they were matching.
You mean the residency affidavit that
Broomfield sent? No, I'm talking about the affidavit for the signature discrepancy.
Okay.
And there's an affidavit that's worded something like, somebody needs to help me on this, it's worded something like, you know, I, Marilyn Marks, voted a ballot in this election. And then there's a few more questions, and then I can scrawl my signature, the bottom of that affidavit. It doesn't say I'm comparing this to a signature, and yes, that's my signature, or I voted a mail ballot and turned it in on such and such a day. It's just I voted a ballot in this election. And then my signature, Mr. Bratton, is not compared, that scrawl that I may have made, is not compared to the ballot that was turned in with my name on it, or my voter registration record. So what we end up with is a discrepant signature curing a discrepant signature. And if we look at just the signature verification portion of the statute, in fact, it doesn't say you've got to tie it back to the voter registration record. But I think if you look at it in context and in the law, you can't make that sort of absurd interpretation of, yes, any scrawl can cure a bad signature. And if you go to my point six in the complaint and look at CRS 1-7.5-107.3, and I have this underlined in italics, and if the ballot is otherwise valid, and I think you will find throughout the statutes and your rules that for ballot to be valid, it must have the voter's signature on a mail ballot, says of the voter's signature on the mail ballot envelope, along with the completed affidavit. So I'm trying to say that for those affidavits in the ballot envelope to have been valid, there needed to be some match, not merely an affidavit signed by a person we don't know who they are. One of the problems here is that the city of Broomfield has interpreted signatures to be confidential data. Therefore, it is with their interpretation of signatures as confidential data, there's no way to go and get to the bottom of this other than if your office does it. Or you probably also should happen is issue a rule saying that signatures, in fact, can be verified. And maybe just if the concern is voter identity theft, just merely making the rule that you can't make a copy. There needs to be a documentation of that. The documentation can be sent to the secretary's office. And in these cases, just as we said on the night of the 14th of November when these were being processed, the district attorney should be called in to investigate these. The signatures are so discrepant that they just cannot be reconciled. Now going to the HAVA violation, where we started this, there's more research that needs to be done on this, and I acknowledge that. I had to turn in the HAVA violation with the information that I had, which probably needs to be supplemented by more investigation that I'm not in a position to do. The GEMS audit logs were that show the upload and download were unavailable, according to Michael Sussek. We, Harvey Branscombe asked for the audit logs that showed the upload and download of the memory card as VVSG 2002 requires. And he was told that there were no such audit logs, that the audit logs do not keep that information. In their response, though, to the complaint, they did note that there was an audit log that was available. So that's a change in information from the time that the complaint was filed. I've not seen those audit logs, and I would like to see them, and I hope you will request them. So an idea here is that you might want to require in your future rules that the Canvas board be delivered all of the audit logs. Also, in the tabulation of the AccuVote machines, the long form reports that would show when the override button was used, which is essentially an audit report, those were turned off. When the city responded, they used the word disabled, and it's probably because I had probably used the word disabled. Disabled is probably the wrong word. I was intending to say that the command was turned off, and it should have been turned on, where there would be a record of when the override command was used, etc. And going to your issue, Mr. Bratton, of, well, there were no federal candidates on the ballot, so should this really be HAVA complaint, I'm really saying that regardless of whether or not this was a federal election, good practices would say that the audit logs ought to be available and on. Are they required are independent audit logs required? They're certainly required by the conditions for use of the certified Premier system. There seems to be some question as to Broomfield's system. It seems that the AccuVote machines were acquired possibly before the effective date for those conditions for use, but the gym system, I've not been able to find out when that gym system was purchased. I think there was over $100,000 spent in HAVA funds for this system. It probably does require conditions for use type independent audit logs. So my question for the Secretary's office is, do the conditions for use apply to Broomfield and their gym software and their upgrades, and therefore should they have been keeping independent audit logs and complying with all the rest of the conditions for use? And you may come up with the technical answer, well, no, perhaps their equipment for the most part was purchased before the effective date. I would still say that they should be, the conditions for use should be adopted, even if technically they don't have to. So the relief requested, we've really talked about most of this, asking you to issue a declaratory order to have the bipartisan judges return and do the work they failed to do. If they do that, I would suggest that it would be appropriate for the Secretary's office to be an advisory role there and to assist the election officials as they undertake that work. If this happens, the order should include the provision that watchers have the access to witness and verify all of those activities going on and any of the documentation. And that's been something of a controversy with the city of Broomfield. They have not allowed us to, as watchers, to verify anything that is not being actively used by the judges in a watcher role. So enough watchers should be appointed so that all of the activities could be witnessed and verified. It's, if you've got 10 workstations, one watcher cannot possibly be in a position to look at all these detailed activities. And the order should include the obvious, that the judges, not the staff, conduct the activities. Going back to the overvotes and undervotes, the order should ask that the overvotes and undervotes be retallied, this time using the processes that are required by both the rules or by the rules and statute. Some people would say, oh, wait and leave it to the court. Let the court make this order because of the controversy that exists in front of the court. And I would say that a court order is necessary, that it will have, the work is not going to have any legal effect unless the judge asks for the work. It certainly doesn't prejudice anyone to go back and do the work that was originally required, but the information is going to be valuable to everyone. Going back to the forwarding of ballots, I would ask that the Secretary issue an order to the clerk that they should not issue ballots based on forwarding addresses, and then clarifying the statute on UOCAVA voters with a rule that says online voting is for very, very limited use when mail is unavailable. The signature discrepancy form, the form, although I think it follows the statute pretty well, probably needs some clarification and enhancement so that a mere scrawl doesn't begin to imply that it can cure a bad signature. Production of audit logs and the determination of whether or not conditions for use were technically required or whether they should just be put into place for good practices. Okay, do you have any questions of me?
I don't have any questions. Do you? Nope.
Okay.
Thanks. You.
Shall I just leave this up here in case I need to come back to it?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. Mr. Tuthill or Broomfield County, Clerk Candelari?
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Candelari, City and County Clerk for the City and County of Broomfield. Before I get started, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I oversaw elections in Adams County for 9 years, and then I worked at the Secretary of State's office under two Secretary of States, and then I went to Broomfield in Broomfield. I was the election administrator for 10 years, and then I became the county clerk. So I do have some experience, obviously, in elections. And currently CERA certified. And as you can see, I've been in the election profession a long time, and the goal is always to conduct fair and equitable elections. So last Friday, I provided your office a written response to the HAVA complaint filed by Ms. Marks. And I just wanted to make sure, and it sounds like you did get that, and I wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to review that document. So thank you for that. My presentation today is going to be short and just will highlight the written response. There are six areas of alleged noncompliance. Only one, the election equipment, relates to the Help America Vote Act. As described in our written response, there was no HAVA violation. Complaint 5 and 6 involving UOCAVA voting and signature discrepancy cures, we complied with all the rules. Ms. Marks seeks to change those rules rather than to ask us to comply with those, because we did comply. With regards to the remaining allegations, complaints 2, 3, and 4, we acknowledge some instances of technical noncompliance. In all instances, we can make any necessary corrections to procedures prior to any future elections. And we are committed to be 100% compliant, and we're looking forward to working with the Secretary of State staff to ensure that we are. What I would like to do now is just go a little deeper into the details in respect to our responses to those six complaints. The first complaint alleged three things in regards to our voting system, the HAVA complaint. It alleged that audit logs were turned off. These audit logs were not turned off, nor can they be turned off. And you'll see in what we submitted a letter from our election equipment vendor affirming that. It's also alleged that audit logs were not available. They were available. They were available electronically or in hard copy. I know Ms. Marks received one of those audit logs and put it in her complaint. So it's hard to say they were not available. It's alleged that the use of admin as a username for our ballot tabulation system was not unique. It was unique. In all instances, Michael Susak was the only person who logged into and utilized GEMS. There were no other users. Our office consists of two people. No one had access to Mr. Susak's unique password. Michael Susak's title is election administrator. In every instance, admin referred to Michael Susak. In 2014, our plan is to name that username more of a natural name, M. Susak, in hopes that it may help eliminate any confusion about who is accessing the system. If we have any additional users, they will also have a username that reflects more of a natural name. But again, there was no violation because Mr. Susak was the only one who operated the system, knew the passwords. Complaint number 2 concerns our certification. It is the Canvas Board and not the election judges that ultimately are responsible for certifying the count. The certification was prepared by the Canvas Board with guidance and confirmation from the Secretary of State's office that all the required information was included in that document. The Canvas Board felt they were satisfied with the information that was provided in order to certify the amended abstract. Complaint number 3 alleges forwarding of mail ballots to unauthorized addresses. No mail ballots were forwarded. Broomfield did reissue to several voters whose mail ballots were undeliverable, and only if the new address provided by the United States Postal Service was a Broomfield address. Staff did the research of those voters who were reissued a ballot and who also voted. None of those ballots were sent to P.O. boxes or to out-of-county addresses. Our records indicate that all those voters were eligible to vote. Now, I acknowledge and Broomfield acknowledged that the handling of some of those undeliverable ballots were not technically compliant with the new legislation created in House Bill 1303. For all future undeliverable ballots, Broomfield will follow the current law and the current rules of the Secretary of State.
So when you say they weren't forwarded, but they were reissued, does that you changed the address and score and reissued the ballot to that voter?
Correct. So they got the correct style based upon the address that was supplied to us by the United States Postal Service.
And none of those were P.O. boxes?
No, none of them were P.O. boxes.
Okay, thank you.
And that was the people that had voted. That's the universe we searched. Those that were forwarded and those that were voted. And again, you know, we understand it wasn't technically compliant with that new legislation in House Bill 1303, and it's our intent to fully comply with that in future elections. The fourth complaint alleges a violation of overvote resolution procedures. Election judges did resolve and duplicate where appropriate every overvote, blank ballot, and damaged ballots. All resolutions and duplications were conducted by the, were processed by the election judges and were conducted in a very public manner. Broomfield did keep a duplication log, but admittedly, the log did not include a field for the judges to enter the reason for the duplication. And the overvotes were resolved in accordance with the Rule 18.6. Although all those resolutions and duplications were done by teams of election judges, Broomfield again acknowledges that some areas of that resolution process were not 100% technically compliant. For all future elections, Broomfield is committed to following current laws and actual Secretary of State rules. And again, we hope to work with the Secretary of State to help ensure that 100% compliance. The fifth alleged violation of UOCAVA. Our acceptance of the UOCAVA ballots is consistent, not only with statute, but with rule. Ms. Marks is requesting a change in the Secretary of State rule, and not that we comply with the rules, but a change in the rules, and Broomfield cannot provide that relief. That would have to be something from the Secretary of State. The sixth complaint, again, alleges violation regard to signature cures. Our signature cure process was consistent with statute and rule. We used the Secretary of State form. Ms. Marks is, again, not asking that we comply with this rule, because we did. What she is requesting is a change in the Secretary of State rule. And, again, that is something we cannot provide that relief to Ms. Marks. Thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Do you have any questions, Ms. Mann? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure. Yes. Ms. Marks?
Thank you. I hope that at the end you will give me just a few minutes for rebuttal on some of the factual issues. And I have some documentation that I would like to present. It's on my laptop.
Okay, do you want to do that now, or do you want to wait until after the testimony?
I'd like to take a
testimony?
Moment and find the documentation I wanted to present.
Okay.
It'll take me a minute to get it on my laptop.
Okay.
So I'd like to do it at the end if I could.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we have a few people signed up to testify. The first is Bill Tuthill, if you wish to testify.
I didn't actually sign up to testify. I didn't check the box one way.
No, you did not.
I just signed up on the roster to indicate I was here.
All right, thank you.
I reserve the right to talk if I...
Sure.
I wasn't planning on that.
Sure, at the end I'll ask if anybody who hasn't spoken would like to. So, yeah, that's my mistake. I just missed that box there. So the first person up who actually indicated that they want to testify is Al Kolwitz.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Kolwitz. I'm a trustee of the Colorado Voter Group. I have served as an observer and a watcher at the Broomfield election. I was a independent researcher of as much data as I could get my hands on of the Broomfield election data. And I testified at the Broomfield versus Marks hearing. So I'm fairly familiar with the circumstances. You know, I have, unfortunately, a database in my head full of information, and I have no idea what can help you to answer the questions that you're hoping to answer. And I wish there were a way for you to query, and I hope you will. I prepared a couple of comments, and I think within a couple of days I can get through them, but I'll try to cut it back. I'm flipping through some pages here to find a particular page. The first thing is, I think that there are enough attorneys in the room to realize that on the one hand, we're talking about unequal treatment under the law. Every county is supposed to operate the election system with the same rules. And whether that violation of that empirical command was accidental or purposeful is not important. Not everybody in the state was given the same opportunities or barriers that were afforded to the voters in Broomfield. I think that means something to what you're doing. The second thing is, I think that Colorado law and rules have recognized that the election belongs to the people, not to the government. And that becomes especially important in those many cases where the government has an issue on the ballot. It is recognized that by having hundreds of pairs of eyes of the public on the election, doing the processings, watching, doing the canvassing, doing the auditing, not the government, that the election system can be somewhat trusted, because it's hard to contaminate hundreds of pairs of hands, as you know. In Broomfield, I experienced a government-centric attitude to the election. They appear to dislike having the public involved in the process. I was attempting to participate as an assistant to the canvas board, having had the experience of several canvases in my past. And I found it almost impossible to deal with canvas board members in an interactive fashion so that my knowledge could be transferred to them so that they could use it spontaneously during the course of their work. So this business about public control is something I think you ought to be concerned about, especially in the context of equal treatment under the law. Not every county is like this, and I would offer El Paso as an example of a different style and a different attitude. The next I would like to talk about the certification process, and I'm really focused on item number 2 in the complaint. There's some terminology that's used in the law and in the rules, and unfortunately, starting back in, I think in 1980, maybe somewhere in that time frame, this is not the unfortunate part, but starting back in 1980, Title I was massively rewritten. And since then, it seemed to be slowly degrading. And there are many, many ambiguities, many, many conflicts. There are many, many missing elements in Title I, even when supplemented with the rules. 1303 was another stake in the heart of Title I and made it worse, not better. I'm not talking about the policy part, about mail ballot versus precinct. I'm talking about just the ability to fairly interpret what it says so that every county would wind up with the same understanding. And it's difficult. And their rules give some relief in that regard. And the rules say that if you can't do what it says or if you don't know what it says, then you put together a mail ballot plan and we'll look at your plan, the secretary will, and authorize you to do the things that are needed to substantially comply with what the law intends as best as can be understood. There is some terminology that's used, like the number of voters, like the number of cast ballots, like the number of counted ballots, like the votes counted, and like registered voters, that are not uniformly understood. Those terms are not uniformly understood. I'll take my favorite, cast ballot. Now, I have enough years so that I remember voting in a precinct, and I knew what cast ballot meant. It's when I took my ballot and, in conjunction with a judge, removed the stub which identified the ballot, and I personally put into a locked ballot box my ballot, my anonymous ballot. And I felt I was casting my ballot. In today's world, that's not clear. What is a cast ballot? When is a ballot cast? And I sympathize with Broomfield in that they maybe have an argument that they don't know what cast ballot means. They may argue that they don't understand what it means, but they should have offered a plan, an election plan to you, that said, here's how we're going to interpret cast ballot. Well, they chose not to do that either. And in fact, if you look at when is a ballot cast in Broomfield, or possibly any other county, I don't think anybody really knows. Because it's certainly not when the voter puts his ballot in an envelope and sticks the envelope in a mailbox, because the law requires that the county be able to understand and know certifiably how many ballots were cast. And we know that there is no way to know that. So you could say, well, let's look at the ballots that actually get received at the county, and let's count those as the ballots cast, and we'll sort of write off the ones that never made it. Well, Broomfield doesn't count those either. When the ballot comes into the chain of custody of Broomfield, it comes in from many, many sources. Not one ballot, but ballots come in from many sources. They come in from the U.S. Post Office. They come in from drop boxes that are monitored. They come from drop boxes that are not attended. They come in from email or fax or who knows, And there are a variety of other ways that you all are familiar with that ballots can arrive. We don't have an original record of when ballots were received. And in Broomfield, what happens is, as best we can understand, ballots come in, something happens to them, some of them, maybe most of them, get logged into SCORE, and that's the first, ta-da, that's the first appearance of the chain of custody. But a lot of things have happened since the voter performed that act of releasing custody of the ballot. And so the term that I'm focusing on is cast ballot. The law requires, in many places, for certification, that somebody understands how many ballots were cast by style. My supposition is there is no way to do that. Secondly, the ballots that are brought into the county and received and eventually do get recorded as within my chain of custody in SCORE. Some of those ballots go into a process, and during that process, some of those ballots will be accepted for counting, and some of them will be rejected for counting, and some of them will be in a work in process state. For example, an attempt to cure a signature, you've sent a letter out to the person to, you know, get back to you, and they never get back, so that the ballot freezes itself in that work in process stack. And then some of the ballots get duplicated before they get put into the ballot box outside of an envelope in a ballot box. Now that's what I used to call casting a ballot. But if we used that as the term casting a ballot after all of the process and lack of control and everything, then it's meaningless. So my story here is you've got a vocabulary that you're using that's not usable. It doesn't mean anything. And there is no mail ballot plan that says for Broomfield, here's how I can achieve substantial compliance and you approve it. That doesn't exist. So we have an out of control situation. So if we were to pursue Ms. Mark's request to do a, you know, judge managed reprocess, they're going to be confronted with these same issues. And I like the idea of going back in order to get a better record, but I don't imagine that they're going to come back and get a better election. And I think that record can help to improve the law and maybe give some people some comfort, but I don't think it will wind up actually improving the quality of the election result. If I may, there's a document that was published by a University of South Alabama information scientist, Alec Yasinitsak. And the title of it is, Did Your Mailed Ballot Count? The Unrecognizable Unreliability of Voting by Mail. And I'll submit this to you by email for your perusal. But essentially, with 1303, the legislature decided to override a 60% to 40% vote of the people to not force people to vote by mail. And they decided to do so without resolving any of the problems. Nothing changed except the law. Nothing got fixed. And I hope that you will use this complaint as a vehicle to document what the pitfalls are and what needs to be done legislatively so that perhaps we can get something into the process even this year. I have three studies that I will submit to you. One of them on Broomfield that I conducted, or I and my colleagues conducted. One of them regards group residence. There's a separate process for how ballots are delivered and returned to group residential facilities. And they, Broomfield identified one group residential facility in the county, and it has 53 eligible electors, or 53 electors. And we discovered in studying that 53 population that the record.
Mr. Bratton, I don't know what the protocol is for these hearings, but I thought we were here to talk about complaints alleged by Ms. Marks.
I'm talking about item five.
Sure. I think that's correct, but it is an open hearing, and we did invite the public to testify, so we'll hear it. I'm not going to say it'll be taken under consideration or not taken under consideration, but we do want to testify.
I don't intend to go through the reports. I'm only identifying these documents. This group residence report that I will submit to you talks about 53 electors. There's a report that was submitted to the court that I will transmit to you that talks about over 100 potentially identifiable ballots that violate the law. And third, I have an internal report which I have submitted to certain members, I think the Canvas Board, regarding the migration status of the election records. We have a copy of the election records as of November 5th, and we have another copy December 18th, and it's observable in the electronic records that ballots, ballot envelopes perhaps, have moved around and changed status in an unusual way that you may want to look at. And that's what I have to say, basically. Any questions?
I don't have any, Ms. Mann.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next up is Victor Head.
Hello, my name is Victor Head. I'm from Pueblo, Colorado. I'm here today as a concerned citizen and advocate for election integrity. My concern in this matter is that if the practices that the clerk's office and election division in Broomfield are allowed and accepted by the Secretary of State's office, it could lead to similar procedures being followed in other counties across the state. First and foremost, the Secretary of State's office must intervene and direct the election judges under a declaratory order to complete the election certification process in a manner that is compliant with the current election code. To date, a compliant certification has not been done. Some of the glaring issues that need to be addressed before they become accepted practices and spread to other election divisions are as follows. Poor training, instruction, and oversight of election judges that resulted in the judges signing tabulations that they did not view. Faulty distribution of the ballots, first by forwarding mail ballots to unauthorized addresses, which opened the door for residency requirement concerns. And second, by allowing the discretionary use of email return ballots. The statutes clearly state that email voting should only be used when a more secure method is not available. This was not the case in Broomfield, and the practice of allowing email return ballots to be used because of convenience must not become commonplace. Email is the least secure method of voting and the most susceptible to voter intimidation, fraud, vote buying, etc. Finally, proper resolution of undervotes and overvotes is paramount to election integrity. The Broomfield Election Department's practice of unsecure storage of ballots and lack of resolution logs cannot be allowed to become commonplace. The anomaly box is proof of this practice, in which surrendered ballots and live ballots were left unsecured and uncounted for the duration of the election and never reconciled, opening the door once again to potential fraud and misconduct. In closing, I'm being brief, I believe inaction by the Secretary of State's office will be a default condoning of the improper procedures by the Broomfield clerk and election division. We cannot allow these procedures to be viewed as acceptable by the rest of the state, which would lead to further compromising of our election system. By issuing a declaratory order that enumerates the steps needed to attempt a true and compliant certification, the Secretary of State's office can best serve the citizens of Broomfield and therefore all of Colorado. And I have this copy for you to submit as written.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks. Next is Mike Shelton, Broomfield City Council.
Yes, thank you very much. I am Mike Shelton, Broomfield City Council. I'm so glad I came back. I had to go feed the meter again, and I just walked back up. So thanks for not being too brief. Appreciate that. I am not an elections expert. In fact, this is my first close experience with any election except for my own. And tragically for me, I never stepped foot in that room when our election was going on 2 years ago. I am only just a regular citizen. I'm a college grad, and I wait tables at a restaurant. The expertise in this room is something to be in awe of. I do hold office. I was elected 2 years ago, as I mentioned, and all five councilors ran unopposed that year. To me, that meant that Broomfield's excellent reputation was true, and I can only think that the government usually was transparent, cooperative. And through my last 2 years, I realized that they admit mistakes and even go back and fix those mistakes, even at our own expense. However, this election is quite an aberration from that previous track record. I've had numerous discussions with fellow residents and constituents and even other council members. And similarly, they are not elections experts either. But generally, they are concerned, confused, frustrated, and have lost trust in their election officials. And I would assume that you'll see a lot more council members and other people involved in elections from now on because of this controversy. You heard the clerk, Clerk Candelari, admit that Broomfield did not comply with several laws and several rules. And the citizens of Broomfield generally believe that the many allegations and errors mean that the election should not be certified. If the Secretary's office can assist in some way to oversee the judges as they finish the incomplete work, then Broomfield citizens will benefit. If the deficiencies amount to a total that indicates the election should not have been certified, then we should know that, and the judges in pending cases should also know that. We need to gather as much information as we can. I would imagine that the comments before me would indicate the same thing, that there are many changes that need to happen, and I would encourage you to carefully consider those changes to the rules and even advocate for changes in law so that other counties and cities do not have to go through this again. Sure, we should be critical of our government and we should be speculative, but there is a certain amount of trust that we need in this society so that we can go forward and get things done. The turnout for elections is already too low, partly because of political parties, but also because of the very real lack of integrity in so many of our elections. I would ask you to please help us. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Next is Mary Everly.
Thank you, Mr. Bratton, for running this hearing today. And thank you for the people who have given input. Today I come before you because I have personal knowledge of the Broomfield election. I spent more than about 40 hours on Broomfield. About half of that was as an observer in the clerk and recorder's office before and during the recount, and also during the opening and inventorying of the late found box called the anomaly box that contained miscellaneous ballots and some other materials. Why, you might ask, did I volunteer this time to look at the Broomfield process? I've been working on aspects of election integrity since 2002. From watcher reports, I feared that the Broomfield election had not been handled well. Also, as a Boulder County Canvas Board member in 2012, I worked for many weeks on an election that turned out not to be certifiable. I'm here to say that what was needed in Boulder County in that election is what is needed here. The citizens of Broomfield, who Mike Sheldon just referred to, those citizens deserve the benefits of intervention and course correction that the Secretary of State's office can provide. Absent these ingredients, the election recipe will be a failure. When I was on the Boulder County Canvas Board, we did not know how to formally ask the Secretary of State for help. We did not think of requesting declaratory orders. We were floundering. Deputy Secretary Steyert was present quite a lot and was very patient in listening to our concerns and hearing us out, but we mistakenly didn't take action to formally ask her to stop the still moving train that had jumped its tracks. And I need to digress just a moment to second what Al Kolwitz testified to. The word cast is a stumbling block. It kept us from certifying. So now I'm here to ask that the Secretary's office take an active role in ordering completion of Broomfield's incomplete work via a declaratory order and to offer guidance or assistance as needed. Additionally, I want to say that as a Canvas Board member, again, Boulder County, no meaningful certification can be made when there are no underlying returns certified by the election judges. A Canvas Board cannot magically feel or intuit that the pieces went together accurately. The Canvas Board needs hard data and the ability to rely on the judges' certifications. I watched the certification by the Broomfield Canvas Board. It was not based on numbers that had been reliably tested in two separate approaches. That is, it was not based on reconciled numbers. Instead, the two Canvas Board members who signed seemingly did so in response to a feel-good speech by the election manager, who talked about the purported source of the numbers, but did not show any real evidence or verified support for the underlying concepts. Because the judges were not looking at what they were signing, and that's been reported rather broadly, the certification process was a sham. It needs a fresh start with bipartisan teams operating under clear instructions and with the guidance of this office. I respectfully request that the Secretary of State issue a declaratory order to cause the election judges to return and take steps under the Secretary of State's advice and assistance to attempt to properly certify the various tabulations and other election details as necessary, and then, if that process is successful, to so indicate to the Canvas Board. Furthermore, watchers must not be kept at a distance from the work, unlike Broomfield's approach so far. The Secretary of State must guarantee that watchers are allowed full, up-close access to witness and verify each step and to assist in the correction of discrepancies, as the law states. During the certification process, the clerk and recorder staff must not take an active role, but should be present to assist with data gathering and in other ways support the process. With this approach, the citizens of Broomfield will finally have closure on the November 2013 election. Whether certification is possible or not will be fairly and accurately determined. Only then can Broomfield determine its next step with regard to question 300 and any other races or issues that are affected. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jim Becklenburg.
Justin signed up.
I missed that box again. Susan Ellsworth, who said no. Okay. So is there anybody else in the room who would wish to testify that has not had a chance? Okay, seeing none. Just a second. Yes. Mr. Tuthill?
I don't know if it's testimony, but it's certainly an opportunity to be heard. So I would encourage the hearing officer, as you review the materials that you will receive from all parties, to focus on the six items that are the issue in the complaint that is before you. You have heard and no doubt will continue to hear many things from people who are dissatisfied with various aspects of the Broomfield election process, most of which do not relate to the issues before you. I would also like to clarify, to avoid any confusion, that the Broomfield, with all due respect to Mr. Shelton, he is one of our 10 council members, and he comes here speaking as one of 10 and not on behalf of our entire city council or on behalf of our election official. And he has every right to do that. But as you assess the clerk's willingness to, as he indicated, Mr. Candelari, to move forward in the future as compliant as he can possibly be, that is where we will continue to seek the Secretary of State's help. And as a city as a whole, we are not endorsing the relief that Ms. Marks seeks. Lastly, I would just like to note that the notice of the hearing in this case indicated that supplemental materials could be submitted not later than the 29th of January, and I would anticipate that we will exercise our right to supply some additional information. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Marks?
This will be quick. I just wanted to rebut a couple of facts and get them in the record. If I'm smart enough to figure out how to reconnect this, that might be a challenge. Oh, okay. Now what? Now what? Because I just had these things up. You'll give me just a second. I'll see if I can.
Mobile icon in setup.
Ah, here we go. Now, it's on my screen. How do I get it up there?
If you like, you can just go through them and then submit them.
Okay.
Afterwards.
One more thing. Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay. All right. We heard Mr. Candelari say that the undervote sorter was on, not off. And if we look at, this is from the recount. This is a sample. It wasn't a sample. It's a real one. AccuVote tape at the very beginning, it tells us the settings on the machine. And perhaps this is an anomaly, but this particular machine and programming card, presumably they were all identical, shows us that the undervotes were, the undervote detection was turned off. And even if this is an anomaly, I can tell you from watching the process that on those 209 undervotes that they got, there was no, if you will, testing of that number, reconciliation. They may have seen some undervotes pop out, even if this information is wrong, even if they popped out, they didn't count them, they didn't test them back to the number that was on the tabulation. And that's the whole point of having them pop out, is so that you can test to make sure that all of those are truly under votes, that there's no voter intent on there, and that they can be reconciled back to the number that the tapes tell us. I was pleased to hear that there had not been any votes or any ballots issued to the forwarding addresses that were P.O. boxes. I just got a small sample of some of the undeliverable ballots that had the forwarding addresses on them, and here are just, I think I just maybe got six, and of at least three of them had, if you will see, here's one example, P.O. box is Cone Broomfield is what the post office sent back, another P.O. box, another P.O. box. And so what we're hearing from Mr. Candelare is that they did not issue any ballots based on P.O. box residence or P.O. box information. So I would just say what did happen here. Of course, I don't have that information because we were initially denied access to the records. So there was no way for me to investigate. But as you investigate this complaint, I would respectfully ask that you do go look to see what did happen when they received information from the post office that says P.O. Box. Did they issue a ballot? Did they not? If they didn't, it's just further indication of some voters were treated differently than others when they had a ballot that was sent back as a forward, as undeliverable, but with a forwarding address. And even though we use the term here that they were effectively forwarding ballots, I wanted to correct what Mr. Candelare implied. I've never said they forwarded ballots. They reissued ballots to new addresses based on forwarding addresses, which is, as a practical matter, the same as forwarding a ballot. If you're going to use a forwarding address to forward a different piece of paper, it's the same as. Okay, so I think that those are the factual issues, other than one that I wanted to put back in the record. Mr. Candelare indicated that I said there was no audit log. I actually submitted an audit log as Exhibit 1. I'm saying that there was no audit log available on memory card upload and download, which is required by HAVA, and I guess they do have it, they just may not have known they had it at the time, and that was what was denied us, or at least told that it was not available. And so that's what the complaint is about. Certainly I did not say there was no audit log, particularly since I submitted it in my report. Any questions of me?
Any questions, Ms. Mann? No.
Thank you.
Clerk Candelare, did you have any response or? And I think we just have a couple questions for you after you're done.
Yeah, I'll respond to that. The tape on the recount that showed undervotes off, that was not an anomaly. That was on every single machine. When we programmed our equipment, when I say we, when Mr. Susak did that, he did it in consultation with our vendor. The correct way to do that is to put blank ballots on, because it only looks at that race. And so if it looks at that race and there is not a mark on the yes or no, it thinks that it is a blank ballot and it kicks it out for review by the judges. I think it's just misinformation from Ms. Marks, because that is the way that we were instructed to do it and verified by Premier Voting Systems to program our machines.
So you're saying because the undervote was marked off, but because the blank ballot was on, it would have caught undervotes?
Absolutely. It caught every single undervote, and there was numerous watchers that saw every undervote come out, and the election judges look at that to ensure that it was truly an undervote and that the name was encircled, that type of thing.
Okay. We just have a quick question for you. How many ballots were reissued based on the return label of the UPS, if you know, and how many of those were actually voted ballots?
I don't know off the top of my head the total number that was mailed out, but we can get that for you. The ones that were voted was 47, I believe.
Okay, great. Thank you. Does anybody else here wish to say anything? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public testimony.
So at this time, our office will take under advisement the complaint and the response and the testimony as it relates to the complaint here today. We'll keep the record open, as the notice said, through Wednesday, January 29th to allow submission of additional written comments. That concludes today's hearing. The time is 3:20, and thank you for coming out.